The University Tower chimes, ringing another session of Ask the Professor, the show on which you match wits with University of Detroit Mercy professors in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Matt Mayo, and let me introduce to you our panel for today. To my right, from the Department of English, it's Professor Heather Hill Vasquez.
Hello.
Wow, you got
chocolate?
You got some chocolate and some, was it caramel on a stick?
It's
what's on a stick?
Stephanie, what is this again? It's a cafe latte, like
from
See's Candy.
Wow.
Yeah, we are overwhelmed with chocolate here. Thanks
for bringing it in.
Dan and Dave. I'm well, though. Thank you.
Dan's raising his hand. I'm glad to hear that you are well.
Even though when you went to your right, I was asking you to go to your left for introductions because I had a piece of chocolate in my mouth.
I'm sorry.
And people are laughing because I was doing this. I was pointing that way. But
did the host really not see that?
He wasn't paying attention.
I had my glasses up, for Pete's sake.
I thought you intentionally ignored it.
He's got classy round glasses.
We need to stop picking on Matt.
We need semaphores, what we need.
Yeah, if you guys could give me a little smoke signals or something, you know, that would really...
Our hearers need to know that Matt has some nice Harry Potter glasses.
Oh, you think so?
Yes.
$28 from Zenni.com.
They work.
Wow. Yes. No, it's fine that you went to the right. I'm okay.
Okay, are you going to make it?
I think so.
You have the longest possible time now as we continue around the table to go at that cafe latte and the sticks.
Yay.
Professor Beth Oljar is here from philosophy.
Good to be here.
Yes, and bright and red and...
Yeah,
everything's nice.
There's like 2 days a year I can wear my thick sweaters given how hot I tend to get. So
looking at the old color map... week we're looking at a 55 degree Wednesday and rain all week, and this mild winter continues to roll on.
You know, January
back in
Michigan
days, we used to have a January thaw, about mid-month. I remember it getting over 60 one time.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Lately we haven't, but we used to.
But yeah, so you have it like plotted out, Beth, where there's like, this is the sweater day instead of a red letter day, it's a red sweater day or something like that.
There was absolutely no plotting.
It was clean.
It was a question of what can I wear that will not require me to wear.
The wool coat wasn't clean.
No, I just don't like coats, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And I regard them as a necessary evil on
necessary
occasion.
Coats
evil.
Are the devil's tool.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not as much as umbrellas, but.
You're going to blink and it's going to be Groundhog Day at this rate. We just survived the first week of the new semester. So
one of my favorite movies is called Blue Like Jazz, and it's set at Reed College in Portland, which is a fairly progressive campus. And one of the characters gets made fun of when he dares to use an umbrella in the rain in Portland, which people don't do.
That's right. Sounds like London. Sounds like London, right?
Yeah, how did they protect their goods? Like their laptops, for example. This happened to me in Seattle. They were like, I was in a restaurant. It was drizzling, a constant drizzle. And we had to walk to this place, and I had my laptop, so I brought an umbrella. And then the waitress was all confused, like, I don't know what to do with your umbrella. Like, she had never seen one before.
People don't carry umbrellas in Seattle.
I know that, but I'm just wondering, how do they keep their laptops?
Well,
protected?
It's called a sleeve, isn't it?
You have a laptop bag. But a lot of people carried umbrellas on campus at UW because you could nearly get your eye put out when people were walking on the quad.
Right.
In those narrow brick walkways with
umbrellas. Do what Jim does. He gets a porter.
Beth and I,
you live in the Pacific Northwest. Deal with it.
Get over it.
Beth and I both went to the University of Washington for our doctorates, so we know of...
You know drizzle.
We know
you
drizzle.
Know gray
love
and drizzle.
I love the Northwest.
Professor Kendra Evans is here from Chemistry and Biochemistry.
Hello, and good to be here.
Well, how are you doing, Kendra?
I'm doing very well.
Oh, glad to hear it. How did instrumental analysis go this week?
It went very well.
Awesome.
It's only been a one-pop day so far.
It's been a one-pop day 3 days in a row.
Wow.
I mean, this day is not done, though.
Okay.
So.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's still young.
You haven't put the girls to bed yet. So.
That's right.
Very cool. I'm going all the way across the table to Professor Jim Tubbs from Religious Studies.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm okay.
How are we doing this semester? What classes do you have,
Jim? Oh, I'm teaching two sections of healthcare ethics this time, and the classes are going fine. It's other stuff that's a bit annoying.
Sorry to hear that.
My email was down for 2 days.
For no reason?
No, it got hacked into.
Oh, for Pete's
sake. And so
IT
had to close it down, and there is missing a whole stretch of emails from 3 o'clock one afternoon until 10 o'clock the next morning when they shut it down.
I hope that they were all annoying messages that you did.
I hope so too, although I already know of three of them that were important ones.
Oh, geez. That stinks. Continuing around the table, Professor Stephanie Conant, chair of the Department of Biology, is here.
Hello.
Starting semester number two as the big cheese.
Just got fall schedule.
Oh, yeah. That's ooh, the sort of thing right. We do around here.
It is a hot mess.
I believe that you had some announcements in your department, same as we did, of people who were getting leave in the fall.
Yes, yeah, so I have one person going on sabbatical, which is great for her.
Mm-hmm.
And then I like every class on my list was there was duplicates.
Oh,
I'm
what?
Like, why are there two of everything?
But that's, it's because they meet different core requirements now.
Is Greg still blessing you when he talks about you being chair?
So nobody else does this, but so I print off all the whole express sheet and tape them all together so it's one big.
Yeah.
Because that's the only way to see them all.
No, yeah, right. I've done that.
And I came in this morning and there were like water spots on it. So someone had obviously walked by with like coffee or something. So Greg came in and said, those are my tears of joy. As I walked by and realized I did not have to do that.
Oh, I can relate.
You got to print up on Tyvek. That's all.
No, I just write all over it. Oh. And then I'll go back in and fix it. And then anyway, it's a mess.
I just hide all the columns I don't need so I can pretty much get it to a couple pages. And then I send it back to Vicky with the columns hidden. I'm like, yeah. If this is a problem, let me know, and I'll send it back.
It's like four pages long.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, back to our show.
Yes, at the table, enjoying a butter tart, as well he is wont to be, Professor Dave Chow from the College for Creative Studies.
Pleasure to be here, as always.
Thanks for bringing the butter tarts.
No problem, and the aero bars, too, which we'll dive into eventually.
Yeah, I believe they've already been dove into.
We'll get sugared up before long.
I'm thinking of Len's Steal My Sunshine when I see you eat the butter tart.
We'll all join hands and sing
or Kumbaya or something like that. You know, it's all good.
Do you have a nice national anthem?
Yeah, we do. Better than ours.
You're not started yet. You wait until next week?
I'm already a week into it already.
Oh.
1 week under my belt.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Right. I haven't pushed any freshmen down a stairwell or nothing like that yet. Yet.
We're proud of you.
Lord knows I want to.
Good job not killing.
Yes. No, I don't believe in
just
killing.
Just take it a day at a time,
we need
like
the
Dexter.
Tuition money. We, you know, maiming's a different matter.
That's exactly, all. Right? Who knows how they'll come out of it. We have a special guest with us today. I do want to point out that Professor Dan Maggio is sort of lurking in the background right now.
Lurking.
We might need him if one of our panelists goes down.
We always need Dan.
We have a guest with us. Nico Seymour is a pastry chef. Very soon to be at Chef's Table. Over in, I want to say Farmington.
Farmington Hills, yes.
Oh, Farmington Hills, okay. I always get those two mixed up. But yeah, we're glad to have you back. You had a great time the last time you were here. How did you end your...
Well, the story was that the last time I ended the show with Bye Forever, which I just say all the time, whether or not it's true. And our director said, you said Bye Forever last time. I was hoping you didn't mean it. And I said, no, but I always leave them wanting more.
Aww, and that's Michael.
There you go. It's a good...
Especially the pastry.
Yes, exactly.
That's right.
Exactly. So yeah, Nico, you're starting on Monday, I want to say, and the restaurant's not quite open yet. This is, for those of you who have been there before, where Tribute used to be in Farmington Hills. Mm-hmm. And now it's going to be a very, very nice place out there, sort of on the west side.
I made successful cheesecakes this summer.
Hey, very well done. My first one. Nice. Excellent.
Wow.
Folks, this is a program. You can send us questions regarding cheesecake. Frankly, it's been a while since we've had some good
food questions. Food questions, please.
Mm-hmm. If you stump the panel, you win one of our prizes. Send the questions to us in a number of ways. You can email us at atp@udmercy.edu. You can reach us on the web at udmercy.edu/ATP or find us on Facebook. I probably don't need to tell many members of this panel that I received this email last night at 9:54 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's from Greg Gogolin of Ferris State University. Matt, I saw your show highlight an interview on Under the Radar Michigan. Looks like you guys always have a fun time, but there was a question. What has more surface area, Michigan or the Great Lakes? The answer was given as Michigan has 96,000 square miles and Great Lakes 94,000 square miles. The 96,000 square miles for Michigan includes the part of the Great Lakes within its borders. Michigan has only 58,000 square miles of land. Sorry to be so picky. The reason I knew this is that I debate with a gentleman from Georgia once. He said Georgia was the largest state east of the Mississippi. I told him he forgot the 40% of Michigan that was made of water. Your show looks like a blast. Thanks, Greg. So Michigan, I suppose, if we count the boundary waterways, is
very
the largest square mileage of any state.
We Canadians don't own that, so it's okay. We can share.
Stuff. You share.
Yeah.
We're into sharing and caring.
America, however, does own the moon.
The moon. Yes. Oh, yeah. Don't ever forget that. It longs for our astro men.
And women.
Oh, the women too, but that wasn't the joke. Oh. Okay, we've got some great questions here. We're only a little bit through them. Kimberly Richards has sent us her wonderful set of questions, always with a lot of background from her. In what country is the president's office an official residence known as the Blue House because of its colored roof?
The Philippines?
It's not the Philippines.
Laos. France. Is it in Europe somewhere?
It is not.
Oh, well, okay, president. So it's the office of the president.
Right, right.
Italy? No, that doesn't
Not Italy,
sense.
No. It's a country that's modeled itself in many ways after the United States of America. It's a very small country, and unfortunately they share a direct border with a not-so-nice country.
South Korea.
Yeah, South Korea is what it is. Gotcha. It's a blue-tiled roof. The Chongwei Day. Mm-hmm. Where on Earth is there a mountain that's closer to the sun, moon, and stars than Mount Everest, which is the highest mountain on the planet?
Mauna Kea in Hawaii?
That's not what it says.
It's got to be something north, wouldn't you?
North?
I mean,
I'm thinking Hawaii or where?
Denali?
There's something about the Earth that you need to take into account to answer this question.
It's
how could something be taller than Mount Everest?
Something to do with the axial tilt.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like Kilimanjaro.
Yeah, so it's not a perfect sphere. That is true.
Okay.
Where is it oblong?
The equator.
At the equator. So I'm thinking.
It's at the equator. You guys are almost there.
So Kilimanjaro, anything else along the border ish warm?
Someplace in the equator. The Andes, right?
Or? Very close. In Ecuador.
Okay.
The summit of Mount Chimborazo, if you can believe this.
Mount Huza?
Technically speaking, Chimborazo is 1.5 miles taller than Mount Everest because it gets a bump from being on the equator.
Because the fat Earth.
I'm claiming credit for getting that
the
right.
The belly bulge.
Stout.
I was going to say partial stout. Credit, yeah. But you okay. know.
I can settle for partial credit.
Husky.
Yes, if I remember my Calc 3 correctly, and of course, again, the man who taught me that class is in the room. The Earth is an oblate spheroid. It is not a sphere.
So is that what you said?
You learned that in calculus? Let's
Jim
forget
is squinting
it.
Like a...
Not my favorite class.
Oh, my gosh. Who has won, and apparently there may be only one person that fits this bill, both an Oscar and a Nobel Prize?
Oh, George Bernard Shaw.
That's what it says. Wow, you knew that right off the top of your head.
We had that question before.
Okay. Greatest quotes ever on pretty much anything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He was an Irish playwright, but also the co-founder of the London School for Economics.
Really?
That's pretty interesting. Yeah. He's won an Oscar in 1938 and the Nobel Prize for Literature in 1925.
Mm-hmm. Youth is wasted on the young.
Wonderful.
That's my favorite quote.
Wonderful. The taped voice of what acting legend was used in creating the gibberish spoken by Gurindon, the long-nosed spy from Star Wars Episode IV, A New Hope. This is a wonderful piece of trivia.
Okay,
so you remember the spy who tells them that the Millennium Falcon's about to take off?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. This is actually from a movie spoken by this very famous
like
actor.
Peter Lorre or somebody like that?
You're in the wheelhouse.
Bogart, something from Casablanca, maybe. No?
They're all dead.
James Stewart?
No. Oh, in that era, though. Big presence. Big presence.
Orson Welles?
No. How about Big Hat?
Big Hat?
Big hat.
President Lincoln.
No, he's got a big hat.
It's the wrong era.
Margaret O'Brien? Or
no, it says here it was John Wayne's voice.
Oh, okay.
Soundman Ben Burt found Wayne's voice on some old film studio tapes.
Awesome.
Distorted it with a synthesizer and added it.
That's a mighty fine piece of trivia.
Not a nice person, John.
Not Wayne. A nice person. What automobile manufacturer started out as a motorcycle sidecar business known as the Swallow Sidecar Company?
Suzuki.
DeSoto.
It's not Suzuki.
Packard.
Is it American?
Fiat.
No, it's British.
British.
MG.
Aston Martin.
Jaguar.
Rolls?
Jaguar.
In all fairness, I was assisted by Professor Maggio from the side.
It says here, let's see, it had been previously named the Swallow Sidecar Company and Coach Building before taking on its famous name. Its first use of the name Jaguar was on 1936 model called the SS Jaguar. But the SS was for Swallow Sidecar Company.
Oh.
That's kind of funny.
And now they've got these great ads with all these British actors who play bad guys. And plus the cars are so sweet looking.
I just thought that maybe like the first car looked like a tiny boat or something like that.
Yes, that's true.
Or a swallow. Is it?
Well, especially a sidecar, you could sort of imagine having
bird shaped.
Yeah.
Aerodynamic.
Yeah.
Shaping.
Sure. I mean, not wings, I assume.
Don't stretch this any further.
When it comes to language, what does a dysphemism refer to?
Something that doesn't sound like something else.
I'm not a linguist.
I mean, I got to give it to you, Jim. It's basically the opposite of a euphemism. Euphemism turns things good, and a dysphemism turns things negative. So you're cheap, you're not thrifty. You're a lackey, not an assistant, etc. That's a dysphemism.
Oh, so it's basically just honesty.
Exactly.
Brutal honesty. Yeah.
Very well done.
People who listened to our Diner Lingo episode
a few months ago
will remember Drown the Kids as a code for hard-boiled eggs. I think that fits the bill.
That's so terrible. Yeah. That's pretty much it right there.
Yep. Where in the world will go for regional? Did the pineapple originate from?
The West Indies?
No, it's not what it says here. I wouldn't have guessed Cuba? This, for the record. Not Cuba.
Not Hawaii.
It's in the Americas.
Mexico.
Not Mexico.
So someplace in South
America. Brazil.
Canada.
It says here on the side, pineapple was not planted in the great kingdom of Hawaii until 1813. That's when they found out that it actually thrived there. Isn't that amazing?
Hmm.
No, it says here it's from Paraguay.
Oh.
That's where it started. Christopher Columbus found the fruit in Guadalupe in 1493 and then brought it back to Spain, and it wasn't until 1813 it made its way to Hawaii.
But it's even in the colonies, right? It was a universal symbol of hospitality and welcome.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we're the only even direct translated language where we use the word pineapple. Almost every other language calls it some form of ananas.
Ananas.
And while we think about ananas, we will take a break.
It's an Ask the Professor flashback.
I'm your host, Edwin DeWitt, and today we have almost all the regular panel with us. On my right, from the Department of Religious Studies, Professor George Pickering.
Hey, man. Pleasure to be here, as always.
Wow. That's the first variation in decades, I think.
Oh, no, I've been working up to it.
Okay, all right.
First the mustache, then pleasure to be here. What's next?
Yes. And on
as always.
On his right, the woman he can't keep his hands off, the Department of English, Professor Claire Crabtree.
What can I say to follow that up?
I don't know.
Hello.
Say it was okay.
Yeah.
There are people out there waiting to hear.
Was it good for you?
And on Claire's right, from the Department of History, Professor Sarah Gravel. And on Sarah's right, from the Department of English, also Professor Hugh Kulig.
Well, I will just say hello and leave it at that.
I think that's the wisest thing.
You've done enough damage. It was because of you that we were whispering.
Oh.
These were quotations, and you were to guess who said them. Who said, "Never lend your car to anyone to whom you have given birth"?
Irma Bombeck.
Yes, Irma Bombeck, exactly. Philip Roth is a good writer, but I wouldn't want to shake hands with him. Who said that?
Somebody after Portnoy's complaint.
Exactly. and who was it? It was a woman.
Figures it would be a woman.
A writer. A writer of schlock, basically, now deceased. One of her novels was just reproduced by a computer, or a new novel.
Somebody's writing in the style of. Yeah, you can call it style.
Exactly.
Well, she's not known to have shaken hands with anybody.
No.
And we are back with some great questions, as always, from Kimberly Richards. From California. This is a great question. I don't know if we've ever had it in the time that I've been on the show, and I think we're really going to like it. Which country has, added for emphasis, by far the most institutions of higher learning, the most universities and colleges?
Which country?
The U.S.
It's not the United
States. Per capita?
It doesn't say per capita. I think it's total number.
India.
It is India.
That makes sense.
If I tell you that the United States has 5,000, how many does India have?
20,000.
It's a little bit shooting though.
Oh, okay.
All right.
It's 8,407.
Wow.
And how many of them are for profit?
Well, there's other questions out there, right? Argentina's third with only 1,700. That's absolutely amazing. Wow. If only the top 500 ranked universities were counted, The U.S. would be first with 150 of those. Mm-hmm. India would tie for 47th place with exactly zero in the top 500.
Mm-hmm. And as I pointed out on my annual report, that we had a university system that was the envy of the world before anybody started obsessing about assessment.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's true. That's absolutely true. Mm-hmm. At what annual sports event is the player given the title Mr. Irrelevant?
Oh, no, that's a draft, isn't
that
it?
That is the NFL draft. The last person who gets a formal pick is Mr. Yep. Irrelevant, and they have a trophy and everything.
Mm-hmm. Oh. That's harsh.
I was brutal. Thinking it would be for the entire cricket draft.
Perhaps we found my athletic aspiration.
Yeah.
Well, they've also got that for hockey, too.
This is an award you could win.
It's not an award.
I could win that easily.
Presumably, that still comes with a nice salary.
All right. Well, it may or may not come with a salary, but I'll tell you what it does come with. The title of last Alliance jersey, very nice. The title of the last pick gets a paid week's vacation and banquet in Newport Beach, California, and what's known as the Lozman Trophy, a statuette of a player fumbling a football.
As opposed to the Heisman Trophy.
Exactly. Oh, that's so funny. Oh,
I want to know who sculpted that thing. That thing must be gorgeous to look at.
How come you never hear about who wins these?
I've heard of a few. Attention to NFL that I know who that is every year.
Okay, I know.
Very unlikely to get signed, unfortunately. Yeah. You know,
I know, like in hockey, the Detroit Red Wings, Jonathan Erickson was Mr. Irrelevant in his draft.
Really?
Yeah.
And he was a real player and everything.
And he's playing now. So.
Wow.
Imagine Let's if we see. Drafted teachers that way.
I could pick some Lozman.
I'd be a walk-on.
Saw the Key and Peele sketch where they were sportscasters talking about teachers. You got to see that, like yesterday.
Yeah.
You
and the Terry's on the plane. After that one.
I mean, that's just the idea of like, yes, we're going to fight to get this awesome math teacher a six-figure salary. It's like, mm-hmm. that's how education should work.
We'll trade you one of our philosophers for a bag of hockey pucks and $1 million and two draft picks or something.
Well, if it's K-12 education.
Oh, okay.
A player to be named later.
A conditional pick.
Nice. And a player to be named later.
Although kids can learn philosophy.
Yeah. I want signing bonuses, doggone it.
That'd be great. What has been the most popular baby name in the United States of America by gross count for the last 100 years?
Mary.
You know what? Mary is the stinger here.
Uh-oh.
Mary is, let's see here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, the seventh most popular name, but it is the first female name that appears on the list.
Oh, nice. James. The six most popular
are male, meaning
James,
you can get more
Steve, Matthew, names. Michael.
James.
Yeah, James was first. Then Matthew.
That's important.
James, John, Robert, Michael, William, David, Mary.
Oh, okay.
The Irish get all the cool kid names. Yeah. I mean, Connor, Liam, Sean, Siobhan with the Irish spelling.
Yeah.
Or Sheamus. we could always do that bad Asian joke where we just throw silverware down stairwells and name kids off of the noises. Sorry. Horrible. I could almost get away with it, right?
You're on the radio. You are Asian. You have to,
that's true.
Disclaimer. You can say that kind
of thing. Yes, I can.
None of the rest of us could say that.
I was named after the doctor, so I'm not saying nothing.
What doctor?
The doctor that delivered me.
Oh, I see.
And you ready for this? In Medicine Hat, Alberta, he was actually a Wayne State graduate.
Oh, wow. Mm. Very cool. You had a connection to Detroit to start.
Even before I knew it.
But apparently, I mean, I would read this data to mean that women have more cool, varied names than men do, because otherwise they would be higher on the
list. I'm just glad that Tiffany and Amber are not on there.
The stock ticker symbol for Steinway Musical Instruments is mysteriously LVB at the New York Stock Exchange. Why is that?
Is it a musical note?
Beethoven?
Beethoven is exactly what it is.
Ludwig.
They chose to honor him because he used Steinway musical properties. Yep, that's exactly right. So, pretty interesting. A very good catch there.
Yeah, you could tell it wasn't Liberace. So, I mean.
He may have also used some Steinway.
Something was housed in the basement of historic Independence Hall in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, until it was banned by a city ordinance in 1851. What was it?
Booze?
Marijuana plant.
No, it wasn't anything illicit.
Oh, darn.
Liberty Bell.
It was not the Liberty Bell.
An unexploded cannonball.
The cracked one is hanging there. Yeah.
No, actually it has something to do with pets.
Some sort of a
Thomas
stuffed...
Jefferson's cats.
Stuffed animal.
Dog.
Yeah.
I'm giving you partial credit for dog. It was the Philadelphia Dog Pound.
Oh. Wow.
till 1851.
Oh. Wow.
Is in the basement
in the basement of Independence Hall.
Well, I guess it's got to go somewhere. It's a low rent district, isn't
it? I've been in Independence Hall and had no sense of there being.
You didn't have any animal allergies or anything.
But now I feel really stupid for getting all like choked up and teary and everything.
Oh, no, that's
stood
because,
in the room
because,
where they signed the Declaration of Independence.
That's because your allergies were kicking in. That's why. your dog hair allergies.
All the leftover dog hair.
Well, yeah. University of London has a stuffed Jeremy Bentham that they roll out to preside over board meetings.
But that's just cool.
That's true. In the world of commercial motor oil additives, what does the corporate acronym STP represent? What does STP really mean?
Oh, standard temperature pressure.
Right. But that's not what it means.
Stop the pouring?
Standard petroleum. So you got
petroleum
in there?
Petroleum is the P.
Okay. Yeah.
Scientifically treated petroleum.
Oh, I was not going to get on that.
Okay.
Save the petroleum.
STP is the racer's edge.
It's the racer's edge. Oh, I'm so glad you remember that, Jim. Last question. These have been a great set of questions here. Who became Hungary's richest citizen at age 36?
Zsa Gabor or Eva or Magda.
Yeah, I was going to say.
But this was thanks to a toy he developed.
Oh, Rubik?
Yeah, it was Rubik.
Erno Rubik.
Yes. Oh, what a perfect
So he wasn't just famous
show.
For being famous. Like
exactly.
He bought his fame.
Unfortunately, it's time to say goodbye, Professor Nico Seymour.
See you on the flip side.
Professor Chow.
See ya.
Professor Conan.
Bye.
Professor Tubbs.
Bye.
Professor Evans.
Bye.
Professor Oljar.
I'm outie.
Professor Hill Vasquez.
Goodbye.
And now these words from the University of Detroit Mercy.
I don't want to just read the book. I want to write the book.
I don't want to just work for the company. I want to own the company.
I don't want to just live in the building. I want to design the building.
To some, those might sound like rather lofty goals. Maybe a little out of reach.
I don't want to drive a sports car. Well, I do. I want to engineer one.
At University of Detroit Mercy, those are the people we want. The big thinkers, the dreamers, because those are the people who make things happen. Great things for themselves and others. And if you're one of them, either just out of high school or ready to transfer, UDM will make it happen for you. Call 1-800-635-5020 today or apply online at www.udmercy.edu. It's not too late.
I don't want to just hope for the cure. I want to discover the cure.
University of Detroit Mercy. We want great things for you.
You can email Ask the Professor at atp@udmercy.edu. Tweet to us on Twitter at Ask the Professor or using the hashtag AskTheProfessorUDM or visit the Ask the Professor Facebook page.
Ask the Professor is transcribed at the facilities of the Briggs Building in the Department of Communication Studies in the College of Liberal Arts and Education at the University of Detroit Mercy's McNichols campus. Ask the Professor is produced by Javon Hollid, technically directed by Michael Jason, and our executive producer is Dr. Vivian Dix. Until next week, I'm your host, Matt Mayo.